Did you know some travel credit cards offer 10x points on your spending? Don't miss out on big rewards for your next trip. NerdWallet lets you compare smart travel credit cards side by side, curated by an expert team of finance nerds. What could future you do with better travel rewards? A free flight? A room upgrade? Don't wait to make smart financial decisions.
Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. Reminder, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. NerdWallet, finance smarter. In recent weeks, we've really focused on some ways that listeners can boost their income. So whether that's through starting your own side business and growing your network like Holla talked about, or when we talked with local realtor Alan about diving into investing in real estate, well, what better way to test the waters? While you are away, your home could also earn extra income.
That's right. Your empty space could be an Airbnb while you're traveling, because that's all you need to become an Airbnb host. It's a lot easier than you think, and you don't need to Airbnb your entire house. You could just host your extra spare room. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Supercharge your work decks with AI-powered Canva presentations. All you do is start with a prompt. You describe your presentation in a few words, and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides that you can then customize in seconds.
Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation with AI.
Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com. Designed for work.
Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today, we're answering your listener questions.
You know what I love is that everyone knew exactly what to expect here Monday morning from How to Money. We've got listener questions to get to.
I hope you're enjoying a nice cup of coffee or a walk around your neighborhood while you're listening to us.
While I just shouted in your ear. I'm sorry. I'm sorry for that.
But... I'm trying to tone it down.
Oh, yeah.
Talk a little.
Nice and calm.
That's right. Create a nice rhythm.
Repeat some affirmations. You are smart. You will conquer today.
You got this.
Would you do some ASMR affirmation podcast readings for our listeners?
You know, I'd consider it.
No, we do have some great money financial topics to get to today. A listener is asking whether or not she could essentially use her Roth IRA as an emergency fund. We are going to cover buying out a lease. We're going to provide some financial advice for new graduates. All of that plus more today, buddy, during our Ask How to Money episode.
You said buying out a lease. It means a car lease, right?
A car lease specifically.
And man, things have changed quite a bit on that front. We don't love the idea of leasing a car, but if you did lease a car and the lease is coming to an end, there's a lot to think through on that front. So we'll get to that and more. But first off, Matt, I just want to mention, we talk about subscriptions all the time and the proliferation of said products. Mm-hmm. But who realized that a food chain, I think they're nationwide, is now getting in on the action? Chuck E. Cheese, bro. Chuck E. Cheese.
Oh, I assume you're going to say Panera. That's what my mind went to when you said a nationwide chain.
Well, I think they did have something like a coffee subscription or something like that.
Oh, I think we talked about that a couple years ago. Yeah.
But this, I believe there's three tiers.
Chunk E. Cheese. That's what we called it in high school.
And I think you can spend up to $30 a month on a Chuck E. Cheese subscription, which offers you like discounted pizzas and free tickets.
Is it a subscription or is it a membership?
Oh, I get it. It's the same, right? What's the difference?
Language matters, Joel.
Okay. They sound the same to me.
I guess when you say subscription, it does sound slightly more ridiculous, but if it's not unlike, we have a membership to Six Flags, like Six Flags / Whitewater, because...
Those aren't comparable.
You pay once, and then you can go as many times...
I have a membership to Costco.
As many times as you want.
I guess you could call it a subscription.
Do you have a Costco subscription, Joel? Well, I would say if that's a form of local entertainment that, and you've got a bunch of kids or at least one or two, and that's something you want to do.
And they just love the ball pit.
You got to run the numbers, man. Yeah. If the numbers make sense, I'm all for it. It makes me think of do they sell subscriptions or memberships at the jumpy trampoline place?
Oh, I think they do.
Do they?
Yeah.
See, that's something.
Or like a rock climbing gym. That's something like we've considered at least.
Membership.
Yeah.
I don't have a CrossFit subscription, Joel. Although it does feel like it because it just automatically deducts.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Okay. Maybe you're changing my mind. I don't know. It's hard to know. What's the difference between a membership and a subscription? Because they kind of, the lines are bleeding here. And at least in when we're talking about Chuck E. Cheese, I don't know. You'd have to run the numbers. How often would you have to go there in order to really make this thing pay off?
Yeah, you would want it to pay off. And so you're asking, what is the difference? One of the differences in my mind, as I think through the two, is that a membership is intentional and a subscription feels like something that is happening to you.
Okay.
Right? And so that's why I said, like, sometimes it feels like my gym membership is a subscription because it kind of happens to me. I see the charge show up on my credit card statement. But that being said, it's something I very much intentionally do, like freaking three times a week. I am excited to be there. But if there is something that you're not excited about and you're still getting billed every single month, like that's when it psychologically, or at least in our culture today, that's when it feels like it starts veering into subscription territory.
Okay.
So something that you are begrudgingly paying,
yeah,
as opposed to willingly or excitedly paying.
Well, I saw that I think Alaska Airlines just announced a $5 a month subscription fee, and you get like free Wi-Fi when you travel, stuff like that. So let's say Wi-Fi costs $10 and you travel every single month on an Alaskan airline flight, it's worth the fee. It's worth the $5, right? But I guess...
It sounds more like a membership to me.
Right? Yeah. Yes, I think you're right. So this is just an interesting one. I just see...
It's kind of like frugal or cheap.
I can't imagine paying $30 a month to Chuck E. Cheese.
Well, yeah.
But I guess some people can.
There's other things you'd rather do. You'd rather take your family hiking or something, as opposed to, the ball pit.
I don't think I've been since my childhood. But I went many times in my childhood. And my kids, I guess, are just missing out.
Have you ever seen the animatronics without the fur on them?
No, that sounds scary.
Super, super scary. It's not something that you want your kids to see. It's sort of like seeing Space Mountain with the lights on.
Oh,
yeah,
I bet it looks stinky.
Obviously, it removes the magic. Yeah, you're like, oh my gosh, that's how close we are to
moving parts.
This conveyor belt looking thing that's like flying up my face. But I'm going to keep chewing on subscription versus membership, though, because I really do think that could be like a new... Because it's like, well, frugal or cheap? Well, it's kind of the same thing, but it's very different. I kind of feel similarly about the subscription versus membership.
Okay.
We might come back to that. But let's introduce the beer that you and I are enjoying today, buddy. This is a Wake and Bake. This is a Coffee Oatmeal Imperial Stout by Terrapin. They're out of Athens, Georgia, buddy. I'm looking forward to it. And they partner with Jittery Joe's, which was one of the better coffee shops there in the classic city. Jittery Joe's got a decent amount of my money when I was in school.
I still remember for one of my birthdays, like 10 years ago, we all went to Athens. We went to Terrapin. It was a lovely time.
It was awesome.
Well, looking forward to having this beer on the show today.
Share our thoughts at the end.
But let's get to the topic at hand. We are answering listener questions. If you have a money question, well, we'd love to hear it. Hopefully, we'll take it next week on the show. Just go to howtomoney.com/ask. For instructions, but basically you're just recording your voice memo, you're sending it our way, and hopefully we can take it soon. And Matt, first question, this is probably something that's on the minds of a lot of listeners. It's about student loan payoff.
Hi, my name is Ange and I'm from Michigan. My question is regarding student loans. With the potential of student loan forgiveness in the future, would I be better off to continue to pay the minimum payment and hope that it will get forgiven in the future, or should I be paying it off as it is a higher interest rate?
All right, Ange, I think this is a question on the mind of a lot of 20-something-year-olds in particular, folks who are not... It hasn't been all that long since they've gotten out of college.
Still a lot of millennials, though, with student loan debt hanging around, too.
That's awesome. That's very true.
Gosh, even like when you read this, the articles about Parent Plus loans and people even in their 60s with student loan debt.
With student loans.
It's sickening.
Yeah. But in particular, this is important to discuss because the SAVE plan, it continues to roll out. So this summer, actually, this is when we're going to see it kick into full gear. Basically, in July, most borrowers will have their payments cut in half thanks to the far more generous rules of the SAVE plan. And the timeline to reach full forgiveness that's already been implemented, this is also much more generous as well, where they slashed it from 20 years down to 10 years. But then there's this other amazing perk where your balance won't grow if you are making on-time payments. This was the capitalization of interest feature that they rolled out where folks were seeing their balances grow over time, which was incredibly disheartening.
Yeah, even over many, many years, they've been making on-time payments, but the balance continues to grow, which is disheartening, to say the least.
Yeah, so this income-based repayment plan, it's changing the game, and it's making student loans just a whole lot less awful for borrowers everywhere.
Yeah, and so Ange, she mentioned student loan forgiveness. You just touched on that, Matt. But there's also the reality that the Biden administration continues hinting at trying an even more robust approach to forgiving student loan debt. So they had kind of the swing and miss in their attempt to completely wipe the slate of all student loan debt. And the Supreme Court kind of smacked that down. They failed in the first attempt. But they're looking into other legal avenues. They kind of keep mentioning this out loud of making student loan forgiveness stick. And so
mostly for political reasons, I think.
Sure.
It's like, oh, by the way, we will do this thing. Probably. Maybe at some point.
They're at least,
if you vote for me.
They're at least efforting, right? Efforting, yeah. Which is a good word, I think. And so it's vaporware right now. And no one knows if, when, sure, or how that might come about. But I think that even that potential carrot, combined with the hard facts of save,
like, oh, sure,
there's a hard reality, right, of the payments being cut in half and the like much shorter timeline for forgiveness, which is great. And then there's also the potential, who knows if it'll happen, forgiveness thing dangling off in the future. I think
of like that hard blanket forgiveness.
Yeah,
exactly.
Of it just being eliminated altogether. I think those combined things, I think it makes paying off student loan debt less of a priority for most folks.
Yeah, but that being said, I wouldn't necessarily, I mean, don't count on that blanket forgiveness being a part. Like, don't necessarily, I don't know, don't fully put all of your weight on that leg. Instead, look at the fact that there are these unassailable aspects of the SAVE plan that have already been partially implemented.
Yeah, I'm going to give the blanket forgiveness a 4% shot. That's just my guess, my knee jerk.
That's not a very high chance.
It's not. But there's a chance. And so
there is a chance.
That should at least feature in.
Saying there's a chance.
Right. That should at least come into your calculations.
But with all of this in mind, we do think student loans should likely be on the back burner of all your different financial priorities, Ange. Student loans, it likely shouldn't be near the top of the list. And I think that just means paying off your loans as agreed. Like, honestly, our advice, it might have been different 5 years ago, but because of all of these different benefits that SAVE offers, along with potentially having a big chunk wiped out in the future, I just don't see any reason to pay off that debt sooner.
Yeah.
And by the way, this is, like, we are assuming that you're talking about federal student loans. If anybody else out there is listening and you've got private student loans, SAVE plan doesn't apply. We're talking, like, there is not any ability.
You got those private student loans 4 or 5 years ago when interest rates were really low.
Were super low, yeah. But just realize that the different forbearance periods of time that folks have had, the pauses, what else is there? The possibility of the forgiveness, this all applies to federal student loans.
Yeah. And the reduction in payment amounts. I mean,
yeah.
The federal student, the private student loan companies, they
ain't got that.
They're not offering the wiggle room that the feds are.
Yeah. If you've got private student loans, just knock that out. Most likely.
Although, again, if it's from 4 or 5 years ago, because
it depends on the rates.
You probably didn't refinance into private loans during the pandemic when the payments were paused. They probably do have a 3.25, 3.5, whatever, 4% interest rate. So it's not like the worst thing in the world.
That's true.
But yeah, it's...
You don't have any of those additional benefits, though.
But I think it's really important, like you said, to mention that these are kind of two different categories of debts. And so, yeah, we're assuming, again, federal student loans here. If it was me, Ange, I would feel plenty comfortable taking this slow payoff approach that Matt just kind of outlined so you can do better things with this money. But we don't want you doing like whatever random thing might pop into your head with those extra funds. Like, the key is to funnel those dollars that you would have used to pay off student loans towards saving and investing, right?
Yep.
Don't take that money, inflate your lifestyle, because
no need to go on a cruise.
Yeah.
Save that for 5-10 years from now.
If that's what you were gonna do, then I would say pay off the student loans, right? If it was consumption versus debt payoff, boom, go ahead and pay off that student loan debt as much as you can. But the good news is that you have options here. And if you're asking if you should or shouldn't pay down that debt ahead of schedule, I think that means you have a little extra money at the end of the month. And I just want to make sure that you're continuing to be diligent. So take that extra money instead of putting it towards student loans that are not the worst form of debt to begin with, and that are actually looking a whole lot better these days thanks to kind of the new regulations. I wouldn't feel terrible keeping that debt around and starting to build my nest egg, build up my assets instead of paying down my liabilities.
Yeah. It fully depends on what you plan on doing with that money otherwise. Like, it kind of makes me think of this conversation, Joel, that Kit and I have been having at home about seltzer. Like, we drink a whole... It seems like we go through a ton of seltzer all the time. We're always like restocking. I'm like, where did all the seltzers go? Well, we drank it all. And on one side of the argument, it's like, well, the fully optimized, affordable, financially smart thing to do is just to drink the filtered water that comes out of the fridge, right?
Yeah. Or get one of those soda streams like Liz from Frugalwoods
if you want to do that. But if the alternative instead is that you're drinking more Coke or more juices or more beer, things that, A, not only cost more money, but might be not as great for your health, Well, shoot. Well, in that case, keep the seltzer around. Keep buying the seltzer because it's keeping you from harming yourself bodily, perhaps, more than the seltzer otherwise would have. So in this case, I think keeping the student loans around and paying on them as agreed, like, that's the seltzer. Whereas the sort of optimized tap water chilled, it's basically like free water that comes out of the wall, right?
Right.
Like, that is taking that money and maybe investing it in the market. But if the alternative is to perhaps spend that money, like you would, like you said, Joel, if you were to just consume it, well, that's not what we want you to do. So I don't know. Maybe that's helpful for some of the seltzer slash student loan holders out there. Seltzer drinkers slash. What do you think the Venn diagram is for folks who have student loans and also enjoy seltzer?
Well, it's probably almost a direct overlap.
Like 100%.
I just hope they're drinking the Kirkland Signature variety, not the LaCroix.
The LaCroix. Or the Aldi stuff is actually pretty good, too. I like that the Aldi stuff, it actually has less flavor. It's more sparkling as opposed to the different fruit flavors. By the way, the Save plan, it doesn't make sense for everyone out there. Higher income earners in particular might not benefit, and that's because the more you make, well, the higher your monthly payment is going to be. So that's something that you want to keep in mind. And honestly, if you found that your student loan situation is fairly complicated, maybe you've got a fairly large balance, well, it might make sense to talk to the folks over at Student Loan Planner. They're kind of like financial planners, but for student loans specifically. We've had a few of their different folks who are on their team here on our show before on the past, and I think they've helped out a lot of borrowers save quite a bit of money. We've got a review up on the website as to whether or not you are in a situation where it might make sense to reach out to Student Loan Planner.
Yeah.
So we'll link to that in the show notes.
The stakes are high. The options can be confusing. And if you feel like you need to see a professional because you're kind of at your wit's end, you don't know how to make heads or tails, and you're not sure whether reducing your payments is the most important option or reducing your payoff timeline is the best option, then talking to someone who's like literally an expert. They have a specific designation,
yep.
CSLP, Certified Student Loan Professional. That's a good way to proceed if you're kind of like, yeah, not sure where you're headed. But Matt, we've got more questions to get to on this episode, including someone who attempted to file their taxes twice in order to see what the most optimized route for his finances would be. We'll talk about that and more right after this. Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So, if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. They are committed to high ethical standards and even had to pass a rigorous exam before they could become a CFP professional.
They offer financial planning and services that take a more comprehensive view of your financial and personal circumstances and are customized for your needs. Certified financial planner professionals can offer advice on a wide range of issues like reviewing your investment portfolio's allocation, handling an inheritance, rolling over a company retirement plan, building education savings, and so much more.
That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org. I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach. Every single summer, we've already got that trip to St. Simons on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host. Or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. And now a word from the show's sponsors at Betterment. Do you want your money to dream big? Do you want your money to be a total self-starter? Are you annoyed that your money doesn't work hard enough? Don't worry. Betterment is here to help.
Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Their automated technology is built to help maximize returns, meaning when you invest with Betterment, your money can auto-adjust as you get closer to your goal. Rebalance if your portfolio gets too far out of line and your dividends are automatically reinvested. That can increase the potential for compound returns. In other words, your money is breaking a sweat while you can be breaking bread. You'll never picture your money the same way again.
Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
All right, we're back, and we will get to that listener who has run some different tax scenarios to see where he might owe less or where, when he might owe more. But let's hear from a listener who's actually moving out to Austin, Texas.
Hello, Matt and Joel. My name is Jordan. I currently attend college in beautiful Tallahassee, Florida, but I'm a senior, which means in a few weeks I'll be graduating and starting my first full-time job in Austin, Texas. Now, thanks to y'all's show, I do consider myself to be fairly financially literate. You know, I have a high-yield savings account. I've been investing in a brokerage account for the last several years. I will be graduating debt-free as my school was paid for by scholarships that I earned. But I'm definitely a bit intimidated by everything that's coming up in post-grad life, especially a lot of the financial shifts taking place. I'm about to be living alone for the first time, so I am thinking a lot about apartment hunting and how I'm going to furnish a new place. I am about to buy my very first car, and I'm about to add a lot of things to my budget that I've never had to contribute to before, like internet and phone bills, or car insurance, or HSAs, and a lot of other vocab terms that are definitely swirling around in my head right now. I'm happy with the offer that I got from my first full-time job, and I feel secure in starting out, but I would love to hear any advice, tips, first steps for students entering that post-grad life, because I really do want to start off my adult life on the right financial foot. Thanks, y'all.
All right, Jordan. Congrats on graduating. That's huge. I'm guessing she did it in 4 years, Matt. She sounds like a go-getter. She might have even done it in like three.
Sounds like she's been in college listening to our show. Freaking love it.
I bet she was like taking those AP classes in high school to get rid of some of those classes in college, and she's like probably graduating at the ripe old age of 21 or something like that.
And the fact that she doesn't have any debt. I mean, so she's a go-getter because she's applying to all of the scholarships, which I know on the front end seems like a whole lot of work, but ability to not have any student loans. I mean, we just spent, I don't know, 15 minutes talking about student loans right before the break. Jordan
just skipped through all that stuff.
Ain't got to worry about that.
Yeah, exactly. Having zero student loan debt and starting investing in your teens and early 20s.
We didn't even talk about that. Yeah, that's amazing.
Means that you've got less financial baggage and you've got better financial habits than most already. Yep. This is just a great reminder. You talked about the scholarships. I think this is just a good reminder to anybody who is in high school or has a student in high school to apply for scholarships. To not, like, the ROI can be significant, and some of those scholarships are recurring scholarships. So apply for those scholarships. Make it feel kind of like a part-time job, because it might be
from a financial standpoint.
It might be a more lucrative part-time job than actually getting a fast food joint job or something like that.
Heck yeah, especially if you find a scholarship that pays big. A whole lot of folks know about it. Guess what? You're going to revisit that scholarship next year.
Yep.
it's a gift that keeps on giving. So Jordan, we'll do our best to offer you some advice here, but honestly, part of that is we basically want to encourage you just to keep up the awesome financial habits that you already have. Like, you are already averse to debt. We want you to keep that mindset. Don't allow yourself to take on any debt, if at all possible, until if and when you are ready to buy a house. We're talking about a mortgage here. And since you've been regularly investing, keep that up as well. So I'll point out, you mentioned your brokerage account. You are likely going to want to change accounts now that you have a job. I'm guessing that you were only investing via your brokerage because you didn't have earned income. So now, guess what? You have the ability to contribute to a Roth IRA. But now that you have a job, hopefully, you said you're happy with the offer that you received from them. Hopefully, that also means a 401k with a match, because you to prioritize those tax advantage accounts rather than your brokerage account. And yeah, depending on what your benefits are at work, making sure that you are able to snag that match via that 401k, that comes first. And then you can look at your HSA, your Roth IRA, those other tax advantage accounts.
I have a feeling that a person like Jordan, who is crushing it on so many levels, is going to be getting the match, maxing out the Roth, maxing out the HSA, and then maybe even going back for more on the 401k after that too. Like, she just seems like that kind of person who's going to prioritize investing substantial amounts of money before she inflates her lifestyle dramatically.
That's right, man.
Okay, and I feel like the first job, it can feel like this flood of income, right?
You're a real adult.
Yeah.
You got a real job.
And you get the first couple paychecks and you're like, oh man, you kind of, it's not that it's I mean, it's wonderful, but you can kind of get addicted to living large really quickly because you're starting to see those regular paychecks come in and you're like, you know, this is a big step up from that college life, right?
Heck yeah.
And it's easy, I think, to raise your lifestyle really quickly. So, you know, for instance, Jordan mentioned getting a car, but, you know, lots of grads, they go and buy a new car because, hey, I graduated, I put in the hard work, why not? I deserve it.
And to treat myself.
Right. But then what you're treating yourself to is payments for many, many years to come. And so we would say, please, instead, consider getting a used car, ideally something that you could even pay cash for.
Oh yeah,
I'd say the older the better, because like a nice low mileage 8 to 10 year old car can help you save on multiple fronts. It's cheaper to insure. You're going to take less of a depreciation hit. Maybe consider a used EV thanks to the federal tax credit if you have the ability to charge at home. Let's say you're not living. I know if you live in an apartment complex, Matt, sometimes the EVs can be a little bit annoying depending on what sort of charging infrastructure they have. But this is one thing, like setting yourself up for success so that you have more financial margin, more that you can commit to investing for your future and saving for kind of more medium-term goals. Well, the lower you keep your transportation budget, the less you spend kind of on something that a lot of people tend to spend outsized amounts of money on, the more wiggle room you have to prioritize other things.
Yeah, we would love for you to think of your transportation truly as that. Call it your transportation. Don't call it your ride or my new... Don't name your car. Yeah. Right? Like, think of it as like a utility. Like, nobody's naming their water heater. It just provides you with hot water. Yeah. Like, that's how we want you to think about your vehicle as well. And maybe you got hired by a fintech startup or something and you have the ability to charge your car while you're at work for
maybe.
Free.
Well, here's the
that's
other thing.
That's like... the creme de la creme.
Think about where you live in terms of where you work and a proximity of that. How huge is that?
Oh yeah.
I say for me, that's been like one of the biggest game changers in just in life enjoyment.
Oh my gosh.
Life
yeah.
satisfaction has been living and working close to each other. And even like when I was a 30-minute car ride away, well, guess what? It was a 30-minute bike ride too. And so those bike rides,
there's know, options.
Yeah. Now my commute is a heck of a lot less than that. But I do think like prioritizing that and trying to make that a regular feature of your life, you've got the ability to kind of start that pattern now.
Totally. Yeah, I totally agree. And especially given the fact, so she went to school, she's in Tallahassee.
Mm-hmm.
I'm guessing she went to Florida State.
Yeah.
And guess, like my brain's going like a bunch of different places. Like I'm thinking, like she asked about housing, right? And she said something about living alone. So the first thing I want to put on your radar is, do you have to live alone? Like, what could you consider getting a roommate? And it sounds like maybe this is a new city and
just
you've not
on Craigslist.
You've not been there before. But I mean, you can look on Craigslist. Who knows? You could find somebody like another awesome individual who you'd be more than willing to split your apartment with or rent with. But it could A, have an incredible financial impact because you went throughout all of college most likely with a roommate. Why not continue that for a little bit longer? But then B, again, going back to the fact that you were an undergrad there on campus, surrounded by a lot of folks that you were friends with and shared common interests, you were like-minded. Well, when you move to a new city, I think it could be difficult from like a social standpoint, right? Like it could be a lonely transition when you are moving to Austin. And guess what? If you find like a cool roommate, I think that could help tremendously when it comes to meeting new folks, to always kind of have a default friend, yeah. Someone just to chat with, even if you're not going to end up being best buddies, the ability to come home and just to talk a little bit and unwind. I think I think that's really underrated. Yeah. And so there's like a financial aspect, but then just sort of the social connection aspect. And I think that could really have an impact on your happiness and how you view your new city, basically, in addition to, like you said, Joel, keeping in mind, like, okay, well, how far from work am I going to live? Because if you're spending all of your time commuting, all right, well, you don't have a ton of time to, like, meet new folks or to hang out after work and go grab drinks, that kind of thing.
And what's the website?
It all has an impact.
Is it meetup.com? Is that where you find kind of different meetup groups?
Based on shared interests?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
A lot of those hangs are... inexpensive. It could be a workout group at a local park or something like that.
Or while you're still at school, just asking around, like you're probably thinking, well, I'm in Florida. Like nobody is from Texas. Well, just start asking around and man, you might have a friend that knows somebody and boom, there's your first hang. And then they introduce somebody else. It's like, hey, is there somebody you could recommend me meeting up with? There's just a lot of different potential benefits, I guess, that I see coming from living with roommates. I think about when I first moved to Atlanta, in this super sketchy loft. It was rough. But It meant that I had some default hangs, like, right out of the gate. And one of the guys that I shared that loft with invited me to church. And so I went there for a little bit. And guess what? That happens to be the church where our family is going to now. And yeah. So what I'm pointing to is the fact that, and I literally hadn't been there in around 15 years. Like, not even kidding. So what I'm highlighting here is the fact that there could be, like, a long-lasting impact of some of these random roommates that you might find yourself crossing paths with.
Yeah.
That's all.
I think it's a good point. Yeah. All right. And some other things, Matt, just like when we're talking about the apartment front, furniture, that can be expensive.
She was asking about how, furnishing her new place.
Yeah. Well, especially if you're living alone and you kind of move from a dorm atmosphere where you might have like two items of furniture. Well, you've got some rooms to fill, right? And so I say Facebook Marketplace and your local Buy Nothing groups are your friends. Even opting for IKEA to furnish that place, that can add up. Like, it seems like, oh, that's a cheap place to go. Well, there are cheaper places to go, which buying other people's used stuff, right? And so
Like grabbing the curb alerts.
Yeah.
Like, that looks like a decent coffee table on the side of the road.
Maybe just be careful.
Throw that in the back of the car.
Bed bugs. That can be more trouble than it's worth. And you can always upgrade pieces over time, right? You buy the $200 or even $100 couch or something like that that's used from somebody. Well, yeah, make it a goal then to save up in 8 months to buy a new one or something like that. Start saving for it. Don't go into debt for it. And maybe get the mattress new. I think that's something I'm not willing to be cheap on. Costco's got great mattresses for pretty inexpensive.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
I've gotten free mattresses before. And
I know you have.
It's worked out for me. So I totally get where you're coming from, though. Like, you don't want to do the equivalent of dumpster diving for furniture that you're going to be sleeping on.
Yes.
But if you know somebody and it's like, oh, no, this is a great queen mattress. So that mattress that I'm talking about that we got for free, I don't know, like a decade ago, it's still in our house. One of our daughters sleeps on it, and it is by far the coziest bed in the entire home. Like, no joke. Like, we all talk about
Someone gave you a nice mattress.
It was solid.
Yeah. So, I think at every turn, there's a way in which you can spend in a way that reflects your new level of income, or there's a way that you can kind of continue to live like a de facto college student, not overdoing it.
100%.
Even though you have now some of the financial means to spend more.
Sure. So the white coat investor, that's what he talks about. He talks about living like an intern for a couple of years post-graduation. And it's not that you can't inflate your lifestyle at all, or maybe eventually. Like, that's something that's totally fine to do. Like, nobody wants to live the college chic student life in perpetuity. Plus, almost all the doctors he's speaking to or writing to, they all have got student loans. Again, Jordan,
they've got to keep it in check because they've got, you know, potentially a mortgage-sized student loan payment going out every single month.
Yeah.
Jordan doesn't have that.
Yeah. And so, bottom line, I guess what I'm saying here is if you can keep your wants and your desires in check, the more financial flexibility that you're going to have, you're going to be able to build wealth more quickly, and that's going to give future you far more options. And so that applies not only when it comes to your car, but again, back to housing. I mean, even like as you're talking about furnishing the place, well, guess what? You don't have to buy nearly as much stuff if you've got a smaller place.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, or if you have a roommate and your roommate has all the stuff, they're looking for somebody to take over the big bedroom that has its own bathroom. They're happy to stay in the smaller room, and, you know, it has a compounding effect is essentially what we're saying.
And if you really want to become a homeowner, I would think about house hacking. I would give long and hard thoughts to that, because that's one of those ways where you potentially get what you want from a housing perspective, but also have some income coming from that property as well. There's a lot of things to think through. And I think one of the things you said, Matt, too, is giving future you more options. When we say that, we don't just mean the retired you at age 65 or 70. We mean kind of growing that margin over time in savings and investments so that you can take a sabbatical at some point if you want, so that you can take a lower paying, less stressful job at some point, so that you can start your own business if that's what you want. It's not just about 40 years in the future, right? It's about all the incremental places along the way.
We talked about this like a few weeks ago on a Friday flight. It's not just 40 years from now. It's not even 20 years from now. It's like literally next year.
Yeah.
Your ability to not sign up for a student loan, not a student loan, you would never do that, a car loan where you've got massive payments going out. Guess what? That frees you up to consider this other job offer that maybe seems a little more risky, but is way more fulfilling and something that you're way more excited about because you don't have a massive mortgage payment because you maybe moved too soon on a home. You don't have an expensive car that you have to keep up with and make payments on. It's even like as soon as next year, all the different options that you're going to have. Maybe you'll have even bigger problems like our next listener who's trying to figure out the best way to optimize his tax situation, essentially, to pay the least in taxes possible.
Hey guys, this is Eric from Eugene, Oregon, and I have a question about to Roth or not to Roth. So my wife and I are maxing out our traditional 401ks. We're also fully contributing to Roth IRAs and an HSA. And when I was doing my 2023 taxes, I decided to do a test and see what the tax implications would be if we had done a Roth 401k instead of traditional. And so essentially it increased our taxable income by $45,000 between the two of us. And on that, the difference between the tax refund that we get the way we're currently doing it versus the taxes that we would owe if we were doing a Roth 401k ended up being around $19,300. And so my question is, at that kind of a cost, should I still be considering doing a Roth 401k? My gut reaction would be to just pocket that money and continue doing traditional 401k, but I'd like to hear your guys' thoughts on it. Thank you.
Matt, this is a test of the emergency Roth system. Does it work? I don't know. I'm sorry. Just that's what made me think of it because he said he's a test. You remember the emergency alert system?
This is a test.
Yeah. This is only a test.
Did you?
But it was in the most monotone voice possible.
So we never had, it wasn't that long ago that they sent out the cell phone emergency alerts across, like nationwide. Mm-hmm. And neither one of us, I think, had our phones on for that because I think we intentionally turned them off because we knew we were recording an interview.
Yeah. So I don't know what that sounds like.
Me neither.
Yeah.
I'm sure it was pleasant.
Big props to Eric, by the way. I mean, similarly, just how many listeners, man? Like so many of them are just.
Y'all are crushing it.
Crushing. And Eric is also doing great. And so the question isn't about trying to do more, it's about optimization. And based on the quick calculations in my head, I'd say that Eric has to be investing like $60,000 a year.
He's maxing out all the accounts.
Yeah.
Like sounds like him and his wife are maxing out 401ks, Roth IRAs, and HSAs. Yeah. Is that right?
I mean, it's probably more than $60,000, which is impressive. And so, yeah, the saying, more money, more problems, comes to mind here. Because then when you're talking about, you know, significant levels of income and kind of trying to save on taxes, it adds some stress. I mean, it's the good kind of stress because there are much worse kinds of stress, like not having enough money, right? So sure. You're in a good spot, but tax minimization is well worth thinking through. Really, why pay taxes that you don't have to pay or pay more than is necessary? And I think, Matt, specifically what we're talking about here too is not just the way to save the most amount of tax in a single given year, but it's about the way to minimize your tax burden from like over a time frame of many decades.
Totally. So bottom line, I think Eric's gut reaction is correct. And not just because it's tough to stomach paying this extra $20,000 in tax each and every year, but it's because of the rate that you're being taxed on those dollars. So every dollar that you move from a traditional to a Roth account, that'll likely get taxed at the 24% tax rate, which is it's not the lowest bracket, I'll say that, right? But the key to this question isn't just what your tax bracket is today and what the rates are today, but it's what bracket that you're likely to be in when you retire, and will you have years of significantly reduced income in the years leading up to retirement that might allow you to make some, let's say, some backdoor Roth conversions if that might be more advantageous to your overall situation.
With the amount that Eric is currently saving and investing, it makes me think, early retirement could be on the horizon. So you're right. Like if you have some of those lower income years leading up to retirement, you are going to find yourself in a much lower tax bracket than you are in currently. And so getting the tax break now makes more sense, right? That, to me, that is the crucial part. Because again, the goal is to pay the lowest overall tax rate. It's not about just a single given year. It's about kind of lifetime strategic planning. And that might mean paying more tax now, right, in 2023 or 2024 to avoid taxation later. It could also mean the exact opposite, right? So much depends on what your future looks like. And these things are hard to predict with certainty. There's no exact clarity. We're all kind of doing our best because part of that is the tax code. What's that going to look like?
Who
we don't know.
Knows?
We already know that the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act is set to expire. Will that actually happen? It's anybody's guess, right? And so we're all doing our best with the information that we have on hand. But thinking through your work and your income goals, I think can help influence the route that you're deciding to take here.
Totally. And Eric, something else that's worth considering is that were you to change your 401k contributions from a traditional to Roth, one of the impacts of that is that you might lose the ability to contribute to a Roth IRA as well, because those 401k contributions, what do? Well, they lower your AGI pretty significantly. And so if you change them to Roth 401k contributions, your AGI is going to skyrocket. And considering how much you're investing, you're probably going to be over the Roth IRA contribution threshold, meaning that you can actually invest less dollars overall within tax-advantaged accounts.
That would be like a tear face emoji right there.
Yeah, yeah. So like basically prioritizing that traditional 401k, that is keeping that Roth IRA door open. It is still an option for you to continue to do that. The HSA is not impacted because it does not have income stipulations, essentially. But even still, like the Roth IRA, it's a bigger deal. Like you're talking about between you and your partner $14,000 as opposed to like roughly $8,000 within the HSA for your entire family to contribute to an HSA.
Yeah, I like the idea of having all the options open. And you're right, you close a door if you move the traditional 401k contributions to Roth-style contributions. Mm-hmm. And plus, by the way, you're balancing your tax buckets by having money in pre-tax and post-tax accounts. Mm-hmm. Having money going into all the above is just provides a lot of flexibility for your future, right? If you were making less money, Matt and I would say, well, the goal would be to contribute to only Roth accounts because you're locking in a super low tax rate. So, yeah.
Like Jordan, for instance.
Right.
Fresh out of school, I'm guessing she's going to make more in the future. So yeah. Right now, man, Jordan, all Roth all the way.
Roth makes more sense, exactly. Yeah. The earlier on in your career you are and the less you earn, unless Jordan is just like so ridiculously smart, she's making like 400 G's coming right out of school, right?
She probably is.
She probably is. So, okay, maybe take that back, right? So much depends on like what your income is. But when the tax man hands you lemon, go ahead and make some lemonade because, you know, Roth IRA and 401k contributions are even more beneficial to those folks in their early years. But because of where Eric stands on the spectrum, I think a little bit of both is in order. The traditional 401k combined with the Roth IRA is just a match made in heaven for him. And then by having money in the HSA, the traditional 401k, and the Roth, you're filling up multiple buckets that have various withdrawal abilities and tax liabilities. So you're kind of covering all your bases here as far as kind of choosing your own adventure when it comes to your tax rate in retirement. And we've talked about this before too, Matt, just how the HSA has different withdrawal rules and they're more flexible about the timing that you take those out. So if Eric is, as I suspect, like if he's aiming for early retirement, well, the HSA is that other awesome vehicle to help you be able to take those funds out before you reach full retirement age.
Heck yeah. But Joel, we've got more topics to get to. We're going to hear from a listener who's trying to figure out what to do with a car now that she is nearing the end of her lease. We'll get to that and more right after this.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So, if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. They are committed to high ethical standards and even had to pass a rigorous exam before they could become a CFP professional.
They offer financial planning and services that take a more comprehensive view of your financial and personal circumstances and are customized for your needs. Certified financial planner professionals can offer advice on a wide range of issues like reviewing your investment portfolio's allocation, handling an inheritance, rolling over a company retirement plan, building education savings, and so much more.
That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org. I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach. Every single summer, we've already got that trip to St. Simons on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host. Or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. Spring cleaning is kind of an annual rite of passage. We've all got to do it, minimize the junk that we have in our house. Emily and I, we just cleaned our closets out. It took hours, but it was so worth it. Now we've only got stuff in there that we love, and it's easier to find everything too. And so, you know, while cleaning your closets is helpful, well, there's something else you can do for your family this spring. Shopping for life insurance with Policy Genius, for example, is a really important part of your financial planning for the year.
That's right. Yeah, and here is the thing that's important to remember, because you might be thinking you don't need to check out Policy Genius because you've got a policy through work. But even if you have a life insurance policy through your job, it may not offer you enough protection for your family's needs, and it may not follow you if you leave your job. With Policy Genius, you can find life insurance policies that start at just $292 per year for $1 million of coverage. Some options offer same-day approval and avoid unnecessary medical exams. Policy Genius works for you, not the insurance companies, and that means they don't have an incentive to recommend one insurer over another, so you can trust their guidance.
Save time and money and provide your family with a financial safety net using Policy Genius. Head to PolicyGenius.com to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you could save. That's PolicyGenius.com. All right, Matt, we're back. We got more questions to get to, including this one, the Facebook question of the week. If you're not a member of the How to Money Facebook group, please do. Go check it out. If you have money questions, your peers are helping you out in there, which is a beautiful thing. Mm-hmm. All right, Matt, this one comes from Sandy. She says, question about using your Roth IRA as an emergency fund. I've heard numerous times that your contributions, if you were to withdraw them pre-retirement for an emergency, for example, are not taxed. However, someone else told me that it's only if the money is still in the settlement fund. Once you use the money to purchase funds to invest in, then any amount you remove early as a result of selling some of that stock is subject to tax. Is that correct? Right now, I keep my emergency savings in a high-yield savings account. But should those savings interest rates drop like they did a couple of years ago, I might consider using my Roth IRA as a place to park my emergency fund. I just want to make sure I know the rules if I need to withdraw from that Roth account.
All right, Sandy, let's go ahead and kick this thing off. And first off, what you were told just isn't true. So even if you invest the dollars that you invest within a Roth IRA or that you transfer to a Roth IRA, because technically those dollars aren't invested yet until you actually buy something. Even once you actually buy something within that Roth IRA, you can still take out the contribution amount, the actual dollar amount at any point in the future without any sort of tax or penalties attached. And so, for instance, let's say you put $5,000 in your Roth IRA a decade ago. Let's say you invested it fully in VU, my favorite S&P 500 ETF. And now it's worth $12,000 now because of a decade's worth of market returns. Well, you can still sell $5,000 worth and pull it out without any problems. So it's one of the cool aspects of Roth IRAs, but it's potentially dangerous. It's almost like it's a double-edged sword, Joel,
yeah.
Because I like that there's some optionality. We love for folks to have options, but there's a downside to the fact that we have so much flexibility and choice.
Sometimes it can be a little too tempting, right? Depending,
yeah.
you might turn there quickly in a minor emergency when you could have found other places to get the money, and now you're robbing yourself of the work that those dollars can do for your future.
Exactly.
Inside of basically one of the best accounts of all time. So I think for a lot of people, it's enticing to tap retirement funds. We've talked about that happening in 401ks as well, Matt. Just people think that their retirement accounts can be treated as a piggy bank. Oh, I'm just paying myself back. No big deal. But because of those small contribution limits for the Roth IRA, you can't go back and redo. You can't contribute for prior years. You take it out, it's gone, and it's hard to get more money in
that
there.
That window has officially closed.
That's right. So with other retirement accounts too, people trigger tax issues with those traditional retirement accounts, which create a headache on top of that. So those are even worse to take money out of. I think of it like this. I think money that you pull out of a retirement account is like putting those dollar bills on unemployment. You're making, you know, one of the biggest investing mistakes, which is interrupting compounding unnecessarily. You're saying, listen, I know you're doing hard work in there, but why don't you chill on the couch for a little bit, watch some afternoon TV, Little Judge Judy, and maybe some Price is Right. Then we'll get you back in the game at some point.
That's right. So it's not a good idea to completely rely on your Roth as an emergency fund, right? And that's one of the concerns here, is that Sandy mentioned parking her emergency fund there. That being said, I do think it's totally fine to think of it as like a backup emergency fund. So don't think of it as black and white, but think of it almost like there's a spectrum here. And so my take is that investing more within a Roth, and it sounds like that's not something that you've done fully, but that can actually help you to feel more comfortable having less within a high-yield savings account. But we still want you to have a little bit there in cash. And so, for instance, if you currently have a 6-month emergency fund, well, you might be able to cut that down to just 3 to 4 months worth of savings. if you've been investing regularly within your Roth for years. Hopefully you won't need to tap those funds there within that Roth, but it's almost there as like, it's a backup. We want you to rely on the liquid cash savings that you have there within your savings account, but also for you to be able to rest assured to sleep well at night knowing that, oh, well, I also have some of this additional money that I hope to never touch because I'm stealing from future me by doing that, but it's there when push comes to shove.
It's kind of like having, if you're a homeowner, a HELOC that you can tap, but being like, that's a thing of less like a last resort. I don't want to take money out of the HELOC because rates are 8% or something like that. Like, it's not terribly enticing, but at least it gives you the option then so that you can...
It's a little bit of additional peace of mind.
That's right. So, I mean, I kind of like the idea of all the above. And I think you're right, Matt. You can reduce your savings exposure a little bit, but you don't want to take it down to zero or to even just like 1 month worth of expenses.
Yeah.
Because the goal is to never touch the Roth funds, even though you have the ability to.
Exactly. And so some of it becomes down to how comfortable you are with risk. Because Joel, I think a lot of folks who knew me in my younger years would say, you are a very risky individual. There have been times when I put my life in perilous situations, my physical health. As I've gotten older, I've changed. And not only am I risky with myself, but definitely not with my money. And so personally, I am not willing, all of my full 6+ months worth of emergency funds are in a high yield savings account. That's not money that I want to at all put at risk of A, fluctuations in the market and to have to sell when the market's down, but B, to miss out on the future returns of those dollars were the market to continue to climb. And so you have to kind of consider yourself and what feels risky to you or not.
I think it's self-employed individuals too. And because I feel like
that's us.
I feel like I have to have more money, more cash on hand than I previously had to have in a W-2 job. Just the swings are different. The pay is far more irregular.
Yep.
So I think everybody's situation is different. That's why 3 to 6 months is a big difference in kind of that suggestion of what you should have on hand. But so much depends on your personal situation. Are you married, dual income, no kids, with options to fall back on? Cool. You probably need at the very short end of that.
You seem more like a 3-month emergency kind of person.
Yeah.
Are you a single income, self-employed, 4 kids individual like myself? All right. I'm more of the 9 to 12 months.
Yeah, you need to be fatter for sure.
Yeah. All right. Let's get to one last topic. This is an email from listener Anne, and she wrote, "I am at the end of my lease, and I'm going to purchase the car. My question is, where is the best place to go for a small personal loan, around $14,000? My credit score is 760 on Credit Karma. I have a ton of offers, and the interest rates are about 9.5%. Is that good? What you think, Joel? 9.5%? Good? Well,
first, I like the credit score. That's good. 760.
Nice.
That's impressive.
And solid. That's where you want to be.
We've always said.
Get the best products.
760 plus, you're going to get the best rates. Like, nobody's going to say, oh, if you're only 800, nobody cares about that. Like, 760 plus, and you're going to get access to the best rate. So is 9.5% good? We'll talk about that in just a second. But first, let's talk about buying out a lease. Not to talk smack here, but leasing is not something we're fans of. So I would just say for everyone else listening, avoiding the lease in the first place is something that we just want to point out. Like, not leasing cars. Leasing cars is not typically, almost never done for as like a smart financial move. It's done as a lifestyle move. Like, I like to get a new car every 2 years, and you know, you might take less of a hit leasing than buying a new car and selling it, but you got to run the numbers. And even still, we like old cars. But what's done is done, right? And hopefully you can do well here by buying this car and holding on to it for a long time. Because of the funky car market we've had, a lot of folks who leased a car years ago are finding that their car is worth more than the buyout price, which is kind of awesome, sometimes to the tune of thousands of dollars. So, listener Ann, I would say even if you don't want to keep the car, buying it so you can sell it and pocket the difference might be advisable. Matt, this is how...
Maybe a frugal move.
This is what people were doing. They weren't turning the car back over to the dealership because they were like, wait a second, there's like a big gap here. I'm going to make more money by buying it myself and then reselling it myself.
No, I like that because there's like a little bit of smart money move. There's an arbitrage going on here, right? So you've got the ability to potentially score a massive deal here and maybe even end up with extra money in your pocket. But I think another situation where this might make more sense too is if you are way under or way over on the miles driven. That's going to have a pretty big impact. And plus, like when it comes to the actual vehicle, you do know the maintenance history. You know what the car is likely to need in the coming years. And so I think for a lot of folks, there's some assurance there knowing what it is that they're getting into.
Yeah.
And we're not sure of the specific make and model that she's mentioning here, but $14,000, that's not an unreasonable amount for a gently used car these days.
That is true. No, yeah. The car market, it had kind of went insane there, popped off for a little while. Things have kind of
things are coming back
bit,
down to normalcy.
Yeah. All right. But when it comes to borrowing money, that's what we need to talk about, because Anne's got to find a way to finance the rest of this car. I mean, I would.
Or she doesn't. Or she could just turn it back in, not buy the thing, and just maybe she just buys a beater.
That
for like
possible, but
$3,000.
She knows and likes this car, and if she's going to own it a long time, I think she can find a way to finance it and then just prioritize paying it off quickly, right? So yeah, I'd suggest shopping around with a little local credit union or two. Lots of times, Matt, you can just go on their websites and find out what their rates are, and then you can say, oh, cool, that's good. This is better than that one. And yeah, do you have to become a member of that credit union, but typically that means like $20 in a savings account, and you're a member. I'd also go to a site called myautoloan.com. They seem to be the best online car refinance aggregator, and they don't charge some of the pesky fees that the other sites charge. And so, Ann, you mentioned you're getting quotes close to 10% right now, but you've got a top-notch credit score. And so we think you might be able to shave that rate down by a couple of points. And every, you know, point you save on the loan means a smaller monthly payment, means that you're paying less in interest, and just means that the car is more of a deal.
That's right. Yeah. So I don't know if you could tell from my last comment that I am not a fan of car loans, but no need to cry over spilt milk here. Like, yeah. we're looking forward.
And I would love to see Ann hold a yard sale, make herself a few $1,000s.
Boom, baby.
And then, you know, reduce.
That's what I'm talking about.
The
reduce
amount
the loan
of the loan
amount.
She has to take, yeah.
So if you are going to get a loan, aside from finding all the different ways where you can cut that amount down, it's not just about getting the best rate and reducing your monthly payment. We would also love to see you lean towards a shorter loan term. I think that's really important, because if you can handle the payment, I would love to see you get out from under that car loan as soon as possible. Like, I'm talking about a 24-month loan rather than a 36, a 48, or even longer. Worse. Ooh, option.
Definitely don't want to go longer, but my goodness.
So that's going to mean that you're going to pay less overall in interest, but you'll also own that car free and clear for longer, which is then going to allow you to start saving up for that next vehicle. For the next vehicle. And I know that sounds a little premature, because you're like, wait a minute, guys, I'm just talking about this car. But we want to get you ahead of that cycle of that saving and buying. Like, right now you're behind it, right? Like, you've bought it and now you're paying for it kind of cycle. We want you to pay for it and then buy it. Like, we want you to save for it and then buy it. We want to get you on the front end of that, as opposed to, like, right now it feels like you're kind of getting drug behind the vehicle, like, and you're like, oh god, I gotta find a way to keep this thing, I gotta stay current on my payments, as opposed to you being in charge, you socking the money aside in your own high yield savings, where you are earning interest, not paying interest, and then boom, next car, we want to see you paying cash.
Yeah, so paying it off more quickly, I think you're right, Matt, that's like the goal here. And then, yeah, continue making those payments, but make them to yourself. Into the high yield savings account.
I love that.
So that you in hopefully you don't even need to buy a car in 3 years, because this is still a brand new baby, it sounds like.
But 5, 7, 10 years from now.
But look, think about how much money you're going to have saved if you keep paying that payment, but pay it to yourself instead.
Yeah.
You're going to have the cash on hand to buy it outright.
It'll be a car that flies, because it'll be so far in the future.
Will we have jetpacks then? I hope so.
All right, man, let's get back to the beer. You and I enjoyed Wake and Bake. This is a beer by Terrapin Beer Company. What'd you think, buddy?
I like this one. This is a classic. This beer's been around for, it feels like, as long as I've been alive, although that's not true.
It's kind of like one of the it's an original OG craft beer.
And especially if you live in the South, particularly in the state of Georgia, this beer has been kind of a classic staple of the craft beer scene.
You know what's funny is, I still remember a friend coming over for dinner this, like, oh my gosh, forever ago, and he's like, hey guys, I think this is back when Wake and Bake, maybe it was seasonal or I don't know, but he came over with it and he had just snagged some, because it was hard to get your hands on some of these more interesting, tasty, unique beers back in the day.
That's right.
And I just remember being so pumped. I was like, Gary, how did you know? And we certainly enjoyed some Wake and Bake.
Yeah, and this one, because it's got coffee in it, it's got this, like, the bitter coffee notes coming through, but in, like, the most pleasant way. So I like the coffee, oatmeal, kind of the way they play off each other. And
so good.
It's like the beer form of a Christmas cookie that you want to drink in some ways, too. I don't know. I like this beer because it brings back such good memories.
Yeah, I think it's perfectly balanced. It's got those bitter, roasty notes that you get from that Jittery Joe's coffee, but it's a bigger stout. It's an imperial, and so what that means, along with the booze, is a little bit of sweetness, and it just melds, those flavors meld together so well, and yeah, it's certainly a classic. It's also a reason why we've actually had this beer before on the show.
Oh, have we really?
Yeah, I looked it up.
Probably a long time ago.
It was several years ago. But I mean, I think there's only like one or two other beers that we've ever had on the show multiple times. And I will say, if you are a beer nerd and you know the beers that we've had on the show multiple times, if you email us at howtomoneypod@gmail.com and you let us know, I'll send you one of the original Pour Not Pour koozies.
Oh, we'll send you a few of them.
Yeah, so I actually brought the whole box of them to the to the office because I didn't want them taking up space in the attic. So we want to be able to put some of those classic koozies into use, baby. Yeah.
And if you want the easy way out, probably dig through just the How to Money Instagram, because we posted all our beers throughout the years, and you can find
not
the ones
consistently
that
don't... though. Okay. I've always been kind of, sometimes I'm hit or miss.
All right. This might take some investigation then. So, all right, that's going to do it for this episode. We'll have links to some of the stuff that we mentioned up on the show notes on our website at howtomoney.com.
That's right, buddy. So until next time.
Best friends out.
Best friends out. If you see Jordan.
It's a great song.
Something corporate.
I was listening to that album not too long ago. Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're really choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers.
Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies.
Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
It's brand new season 2. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedatum. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Vilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to brand new on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast Climbing in Heels is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.